You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And now, it's time for the Lakeside Drive F1 podcast. Here are your hosts and my supreme leaders, James Baldwin, Campy, and Freya Brolsma.
The Japanese Grand Prix never happened, and you can't tell me otherwise because I didn't watch it. It doesn't exist. It's not real in my memory, but it's real in the memory of the two people who did watch this Grand Prix, even though one of them fell asleep at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's right. This is the Japanese Grand Prix review. And I'm joined to talk all about it by my friends and yours, Thomas J. Camp, the Snorer. Hello, mate.
Good morning. How are you? Are you well?
Yes, thank you very much. I'm doing well. Hello, Freya Brolsma.
Hello. This is, I just have that feeling. Sometimes we have a feeling going into podcasts that it's just going to be a downward spiral. And for some reason, I have that feeling today.
Thomas J. Camp, this is for you. Liberty Media is probably going to buy MotoGP and actually give Dorna a kick in the ass, because they're bloody useless, to do something good with this brilliant series. Discuss.
Yeah, great. Great for the sport. I think MotoGP is an excellent and probably the number two racing category on the planet, really. It's great. It's got fucking hell, it is 7:30 in the morning and
that's gonna stay in.
No, it's not. Yeah. MotoGP.
Would you like okay, we're rolling. All right, quiet on set. Ready? Action.
Good. Yeah, great, great for MotoGP. MotoGP as a category is the probably the second most viewed motorsport category so in the world. Great racing. I really enjoy it. And we did have a small podcast on it for a while. But, yeah, good for Liberty Media. It'll just expand. When they eventually decide to sell to the Saudis, it will make it more attractable for them to do so. Oh, geez, it's been a morning this morning, hasn't it? No, it'll make it more attractive, sorry. Fucking hell. What a morning.
This is the best I could have ever hoped for.
This is why I'm the prophet, because this shit is hilarious.
Attractable.
Attractive, geez. Listener.
Yes.
We never edit this ever. Always goes out exactly the way it's planned.
That's not true.
You only edit out my language.
James is like, excuse me, where's the last 700 hours of my life go then, if not editing absolute bejesus out of
Show
this podcast?
Show some respect.
Yeah.
You the selective editing, yes, attractable indeed. It is very attractable, MotoGP, to audiences. One thing I would say is that Liberty Media, for whatever your views on Drive to Survive is and what Liberty Media has done to the sport, positive or negative, the amount of teams that went bust in Formula One at the end of Bernie Eccleston's reign compared to now, there are none. And MotoGP has a fantastic fan base that is very engaged. It has fantastic racing. They go to some amazing circuits all around the world, different circuits also to what just F1 does. And as Campy said, we had a podcast for a bit because we bloody love the sport and it is worth actually investing in. And so, Campy, I think honestly it's a positive thing for MotoGP and for MotoGP fans, even those who think this is going to be the end of their sport.
No, it's absolutely not. Liberty Media taking on F1 5 or 6 years ago has grown this sport immensely, and a lot of that was through a Drive to Survive. We'd come off Melbourne. We just had 455,000 people attend the Grand Prix. It is, in parts of the world, viewership is up amongst the key cohort, that sort of 18 to 35, immensely more than it ever has been. So the hope will be that they can take MotoGP, do something similar to what they've done with F1, and then eventually in 5 to 7 years, once they've built it to a point, they can sell it. And it's more attractive for those Saudi investors, which will ultimately buy it, because that's where the money is in this. Well, that's where the big money is.
Did you just say the same point again?
Yeah. Well, you edited that out.
You just said the same thing again. No, I won't. You just said the same thing again. All right, I'm going to move off of you now. Let's move on to Formula One. No, Formula One, Freya Brolsma, please rescue this podcast. You're the sinking ship, the two idiots. And
I'm not the sinking ship.
No, you're going to save the sinking ship. Yeah, yeah. Quick, captain us out of these stormy waters. I'd like to talk about Mercedes very briefly and about this seat going into 2025, because during the press conferences on Thursday, There was some rumours about Sebastian Vettel potentially being included for this seat for 2025. Now, this was a radio interview that he did with a made-up radio station in the UK, and the question was put to him, would you ever consider coming back to Formula One, and have you been talking with Toto, basically? He said, yes, I have been talking with Toto, just more broadly about what's going on. And, you know, it is an attractive seat. They are a team that's towards the front. Well, not anymore. And so, of course, F1 Media does what it does best and took the story and ran with it, saying Seb's going to return to Formula One into Mercedes. On Friday, when asked about it, Toto Wolff said, we can't just say flat no to someone like Seb Vettel, but also no, because I'm not going to make any decisions anytime soon. I know that I'm going to have the opportunity to pass up on experienced drivers like Carlos Sainz and Fernando Alonso, which all indicates to us that Kimi Antonelli, the current driver in Formula 2, who skipped F3 completely, who is this prodigal son of Mercedes in the same way that Lewis Hamilton was for McLaren back in the day, is still the lead contender for that seat.
Yeah, look, I think the thing is that when the Mercedes seat initially came up, obviously after the news of Lewis Hamilton moving over to Ferrari next year, we immediately start looking to other experienced drivers currently on the grid to take that seat, because they're replacing one of the most experienced drivers on the grid. So they'll be looking for somebody else with equal experience, if not potentially the same success, because it doesn't exist, but somebody else who can fill those very, very big shoes, take on a leadership role, all of those things. But with Mercedes not really challenging for race wins, even podiums at many races, and with still a year and a half to go or more of this current set of regulations, and at which point, you know, that seat becomes available an entire year, it's actually a great opportunity for a younger driver, a new driver, without having the pressure of being in a race-winning car. Because I think very early in the season, when everyone had their hopes up that perhaps Mercedes had found their way within this set of regulations, you know, we're saying, look, this is a car that's at the front of the grid, and if we get the right driver in there, we should just continue the success that they have had in yesteryear. But that's not the Mercedes as we see it now. We actually see it as, a upper middle pack offer, basically, which doesn't necessarily lend itself to somebody who has that experience and perhaps is, you know, we're talking Carlos Sainz here, of course, in particular, and who'd be looking to be at the front of the grid. You know, he's potentially looking at Red Bull still as in terms of his preferred option. But I just think that the offering is not what it was in January even. I think it is actually a great opportunity for a young driver without the pressure that comes with the idea of saying, if we get a good enough driver, this car can win a championship, because it can't. That's not what it is at the moment, and it's unlikely to be what it will be next year. Like, I don't see them going from where they are now to being a contender for a world champion ship car in their final year of under this set of regulations. So I think that's potentially one of the reasons that Toto is actually more open to looking at younger drivers. And when you have somebody like Antonelli ready and raring to go, that might be a better option. And then the other thing that will do is allow George to really step into that leadership role, because he hasn't really been able to do that until Lewis moves out of the way.
Campy, let's see if you can answer this by saying that F1's going to sell to Saudi Arabia at some point. Fernando Alonso said that when asked about Mercedes, and there's been this rumours about a single-year contract, of course, for him, that it's not maybe as exciting an opportunity when they're behind him most of the time. Aston Martin really seemed to have all of their shit together and are a very strong package. We've discussed, I think, a little bit about Adrian Newey wanting to come across to Aston Martin, wanting him to come across, and then Verstappen, and then some potential big changes there. Aston Martin, of course, have taken a significant number of Red Bull, Ferrari, and Mercedes employees over the last couple of years as well. So it is a stronger proposition, I think, at this point. And if Carlos Sainz could choose between Aston Martin and Mercedes, Campy, I think he'd go with Aston Martin.
Well, yes, he probably would. He should stay every time Fernando Alonso decides to make a change. It is the wrong decision for him to make it. So buck that trend and stay on with Aston Martin. Lawrence Stroll has got that organisation heading in the right way. We'll leave it there, except for his son driving. The problem I've got is I don't – Red.
We'll he did not there. Leave it there.
Except for we don't leave it there.
I don't think Red Bull is going to change too much at the moment. The team is still winning. The designers and the core of the team still there. They'll probably change a driver next year. I'm not sure what Antonelli's contract looks like for next year. I know he's a Mercedes junior, but as we saw with Oscar Piastri, Alpine saga, those contracts are worth nothing. Red Bull, if they decide to get rid of Checo, they could throw their hands in the ring for this young talent too. So it leaves some...
Jeez, that's just throwing my hands in the ring.
Well, they could... Bloody, I am struggling this morning, but they could throw a spanner in the whole works for who goes where, who goes what. I still think Carlos Sainz will get a big drive somewhere, albeit could be back at Red Bull, could be Mercedes. Probably the only seat in those top teams that are sorted for next year is Ferrari. But Ferrari could go back on that with Carlos's performance if he continues to perform like he has in the first three out of four races this year, convincingly beating Leclerc in every one of them. If that happens for the rest of the year, well, they may get a change there. So who knows? It's going to be silly season. It's going to be the best silly season. And all I would say is that 2026 moving forward, I don't think much is going to change in the pecking orders of cars at the top, the top four teams. So until we get new regs, that is.
All right, let's keep going now. Let's talk about the national anthem. Frey, you saw it?
I did. And I think it can be summarized pretty briefly by polite, traditional, short and sweet. It was not something that kind of gave you a strong sense of excitement, I might say, when it comes to this race. But that anthem is what it is. It's short. They didn't do anything special with it, and I don't really have a problem with that. It's your anthem. Sing it. Fine. It was very polite along with the rest of the weekend.
Any flypasts this weekend?
Not that I noticed.
I don't come think on, so. Japan. Lift. That's no good. All right, well, let's move on to our Discord comment of the week.
And now it's time for the Discord comment of the week.
Freya, who does your Discord comment of the week go to?
Mine goes to Where to Find Mel with, "This ain't Desert Storm, Logan," after his spin towards the end of the race, which kicked up quite the dust storm.
Oh, dear.
Well done, Mel.
Oh, dear. Yes, okay. Well, mine goes to Brabham, who said, your DR depression is at a peak when you refuse to take in any sort of F1 content, excluding LSD. Well, yes, we're too busy talking about the same point over and over again for 10 minutes. and it's not – let's see. Campy's been looking – just open Discord for the first time this weekend and is searching through.
No, I took some photos, but I can't find it. So in the sake of time this morning, Jim, just keep moving on, would you? Bloody hell. Tilly will be able to said something funny, so I'll give him a share.
Come on. No. You've taken photos. Okay, let's go through this together. Photo. Let's open your phone.
I'm opening it, mate. I'm looking for it. The nephew's been taking photos. There's about 500 bloody photos on there of selfies and stupid faces that I can't, you know, seem to decipher around. So
I remember my first time touching technology too.
Faces and Discord chat are remarkably similar. It's true.
Welcome to the Discord too if you've just joined. If you haven't and you are seeking somewhere that is a safe space away from all of the hate placed on Daniel, you're welcome. Welcome in. You can find the link either on our website, which is lakesidedrive.au. Go to the community button, or you can find in the show description where to join now. And thanks for being part of it, if you are too. Of course, it's been brilliant. I got all of my updates about the Grand Prix watching all of the messages come through as I was standing in the service park waiting for the cars to come back.
Could also be called a paddock, depending on who you ask.
Yeah, not anyone from the rally. Paddock. If you say paddock to anyone from off-road, they get very frustrated with you. It's not a paddock. All right, let's go to our predictions. This is fun. Campy, your front row was Oscar and Max. Okay, one out of two ain't bad. Your podium was Piastri, Sainz and Leclerc. So one out of three there. 10th, Ocon. Don't know why you thought he'd get in the points. Last, Gasly. Well, no, actually. And Bold, DR top five. Never make that prediction ever again in your life. You've cursed him. Podcaster's pox
put upon himself.
Thanks to you.
What's he done off track to deserve such horrendous luck?
Yeah, seriously. If he lowers the price of all of his merchandise and provides shipping under $50 to Australia, I think his fortunes might turn around.
I think it's because he
show went some on respect,
the,
Daniel.
He did an interview with Don Lemon. That was the start of his downfall.
Who?
Don Lemon, that wanker from CNN.
Okay, cool. I've never heard of that person. Freya, yours front row was Max and Charles. So one out of two. Again, podium Max, Piastri, Norris. Well, one out of three. Stroll was last. No. 10th was Stroll, I should say. And not too far away. Well done.
Not too far away.
Last VB. No, thank God. And Bold, Sergeant in the points. No, not with that attitude. But it's Bold. It's what we do. My predictions were front row Max and Piastri. Again, one out of two. Podium Max, Piastri, and Perez. Not in that order. Piastri first because clearly just trying to get all. We're all compensating here on this podcast. With Daniel's downfall, we're like, let's put all of our eggs into the Oscar basket and then not say anything about it and see what happens. 10th, Yuki. So I nailed that one. Last, Ocon. Bold VB in points. No, but he did have a much better qualifying. His Q1, by the way, I think he finished in 8th in Q1, was bloody what a lap. If only he could put it back together, back to back all the time like that. I always take a short ad break and we'll be back. Massive thank you to NordVPN for sponsoring this episode of Lakeside Drive. Yes, NordVPN is back. And if you go to nordvpn.com/lakesidedrive right now, you can get a 2-year plan plus 4 months absolutely free. Now, the three of us all use this app. Even when Campy doesn't know how to open Discord or his photo app to try and find something else, he can know for certain that he is protected on any Wi-Fi network all over the world. It stops people looking at what you're doing online, especially if you're in a hotel or in a cafe like Freya, if you travel a lot too and you need to get that sort of McDonald's Wi-Fi access. You don't want Ron McDonald looking at what you've been doing or what kind of mecca you've been searching
Burglar.
For out of the Australian Grand Prix activation because you couldn't get an appointment. Well, you can do that with NordVPN. It is genuinely the best. We've been using it for years, way before they even sponsored this podcast and this episode. Get yourself a deal. And if you don't like it, it's not a problem because there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. Thank you again to NordVPN. All right, let's go through our team-by-team analysis. We'll start right at the very back with Williams. Logan Sargeant qualified 19th, Campy finished 17th, Alex Albon qualified 14th, and we won't talk about it.
Well, yeah, look.
We will talk about it. Of course we will.
struggling, that team. You could just see the deflated faces of the garage members there, the pit crew. You could see that, oh, geez, we've got another repair bill. Don't know where the next chassis is coming from. What is happening? Sounds like the Williams of the 2017-2018 period at the moment with their off-track manufacturing and parts, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, real shame for them. Yeah. Look, Albon probably promised a bit more, got a great start, but, yeah, it was his fault. Did a stupid thing, in my opinion, taking out Danny Rick. So all his fault, all his fault. And, we'll talk about it. You guys can talk about it. I don't want to. We'll talk about it when we get to Danny Rick.
No, talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it.
Still grumpy.
Do you know what you do want to talk about?
What?
Formula One selling to Saudi Arabia. Let's dissect, shall we, a little bit of it, because I read through the stewards report, about the incident, and they said basically if this wasn't a first lap incident, Daniel was at fault because he came across and squeezed Alex on the outside. Oh. He didn't realize. Just wait, Campy.
I know, your face is contorting in a way that doesn't need to.
He's having a fit. Someone call an ambulance.
These stewards are fuckwits.
Here we go. There it is. Daniel didn't see Alex on the outside. He was being pressured by Lance Stroll on the inside. The fact that Lance Stroll was there on the inside is what the mitigating circumstance is for Ricardo. So there was two things. Opening lap. And that sort of lap one incident and the fact that Stroll was up on the inside, that's why Daniel moved across, didn't see Albon was there, punted Albon into the wall. Now, Albon said, from the point of being of that contact with Daniel Ricciardo's right rear tire and entering the wall, he thought, Jesus is not what the team needs, which shows you just how much Formula One drivers work, the pace that they work at and their brains work at. But Freya, it was a lap one incident, hyper unfortunate. Especially for Daniel, because he did actually have a fairly decent qualifying, 0.055 seconds off of Yuki in Q2 to get into Q3, and Yuki couldn't improve on 10th anyway. So he would have found a little bit more confidence, just unfortunately not a vibe. But we're talking about Williams, I suppose. So it's a shame for Albon. And one of the things that I saw actually in the Discord that you were most displeased about was that Albon kept the good chassis and Logan had the repaired chassis.
Logan's crash in Melbourne has set off such a chain reaction of issues within that team and actually exposed quite a few chinks in their very friendly armour. Like it's shown exactly what they think. And it's not that we didn't know that already, but it shows exactly what they think about Logan's position within that team. It shows the budget limitations that they're obviously still grappling with massively. It shows that they are having to make massive trade-off decisions when it comes to managing that budget and parts. It shows that they are not able to make things happen as quickly as other teams for one reason or another, whether that is operational processes and their efficiencies or whether that is their budget. That accident has just set off this kind of dominoes effect and what we've learned about that team. This is just one of those situations where you go, I understand intellectually why they have made the decisions that they have. I don't agree with them. And obviously that accident, it's a lap one incident. It just is what it is. And later in the race, it was indeed Sargeant who then had the closest call, I would say, of his own doing to potentially seeing them going into China with so few parts, they would have to be getting incredibly stressed when it comes to managing their logistics for the upcoming race. So I just think it's interesting where just how much we learn about the team following one incident because of the follow-on impact that has had.
Yeah, and the chassis, this spare chassis, isn't going to be around till Miami, they're saying, potentially later. It is interesting that within this budget cap new world of Formula One and everyone's supposed to be spending the same money and Dorilton Capital was supposed to have sorted Williams and everything seemed good, as you said, Freya, maybe the shiny outside is not what is exactly happening on the inside. But for Williams, it's a shame because they did show some progress last year One thing for sure, though, Alex Albon wants the hell out of that team, I can bet. Let's talk about Alpine now because, well, surprise, surprise, it didn't score any points. Gasly qualified 17th, finished 16th, and that's because there were many cars that had crashed or failed to finish. And Ocon qualified 15th and finished in 15th. Your mate Ocon, Campy, when he got into Q2, was celebrating it like it was Hungary 2022 whenever he won that race.
Yeah, I don't mind them celebrating the small wins that they have. No matter how it's win, the big or small they are, you got to celebrate the wins. It's good for that team to get out of Q3. So, excellent. Let them do it. That's about all they had to look forward to all year, I think.
All year.
Yep.
Early days, and that's it. This is the peak. Well done. Congratulations. Nothing much more to say. Freya, is there about Alpine?
I have no notes.
No, I have no notes. Let's move on to Sauber. No, let's move on to Sauber because Bottas did have a much better showing. As I mentioned earlier, Q1, he put it in eighth, and it was a genuine shock and surprise to everyone. Qualified in 13th in the end, so not a bad showing for Sauber considering where they've been this year, and finished in 14th. Joe had an absolutely woeful time, could not get his car to comply with anything that he wanted to do. The oversteer in that last chicane section in qualifying was very obvious, and as a result, qualified 20th and then had a DNF. Freya, you mentioned last weekend that Sauber, I'm trying to get back on top of this wheel nut issue from a pit stop point of view. They did have something in place, but as a result, they were doing sort of 5-second pit stops, which I guess is better than a wheel nut disappearing and getting a time or a financial penalty.
Mm. Well, that's it. Like you said, this is obviously a bit of a stopgap until they can actually resolve the issue in its entirety. It's kind of limit the damage that it's going to do as opposed to actually having fixed the issue. And I think that's what was just such a shame in qualifying, yeah, watching Bottas have such a fantastic lap. And it was so nice hearing his name referred to, yeah, in a positive way by the commentators, everything. It was really nice. What wasn't nice was the impending sense of doom when you know what is likely to come the next day, that he was, wouldn't be able to capitalize on the progress that they had made when it comes to their one lap pace. So look, I think there is some hope in there at least, you know, and potentially it's track specific, but it was a glimmer, and that's what this team needs right now. But let's be clear, they're so far from resolving that issue. We're not going to see that fixed until well after Miami, I don't think.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because at some point soon we're going to have to start having a conversation about who ends up in this team, because with Audi now buying 100% of it, the new regulations coming in 2026, it actually being a manufacturer, Sauber by itself, not ideal, like not a fantastic place to go, but there are positives coming. And I think with someone like Valtteri to be able to put some of those performances in, then maybe the mechanics and the team can get excited too.
I think also, like, he's the perfect person to have in a team like this in that he's been pretty consistent. I know that was a bit of a challenge for him at when he was at Mercedes, but over the course of his time at Sauber, he's been an Alfa Romeo, he's been pretty consistent. He's a steady set of hands, and in terms of who takes on this team when it becomes everything new and shiny, that's a multi-year deal waiting to happen. But there's going to be a trade-off for the driver who accepts it, because it's not going to be smooth sailing at the start. They're not going to be on podiums. They're not going to be, you know, up there at the front straight off. So they're going to also have limitations as to who actually wants to go there. People who are with few other options but are still a really solid set of hands, and ideally with some experience as well to support them through those early teething issues and beyond as they figure their way through this sport. So he is the right person to be there at the moment. I think the question really comes up as to when we start talking about Joe, to be entirely honest, but we can't actually have that conversation properly at the moment because of the car that he's in and the challenge of the team issues. Like, it's not the environment to be able to assess his potential.
I think
that's a conversation that needs to happen soon.
I think Valtteri is underrated, to be perfectly honest. Everyone talks about Carlos being one of the most underrated drivers on the grid. I think Valtteri is as well. He's never in any conversations about his pace. He's the same age as us, so he's not too old. He's not too young. He's just right. He is that bowl, the perfect bowl of porridge. There is the Mercedes reference for that too. Let's talk about Haas, Campy, if we can, because Nico Hülkenberg is starting to show his actual pace, I think, and the leadership in this team. Qualified 12th, finished 11th. Magnussen qualified 18th, finished 13th. I like both of these drivers, but in the back of my mind, out of Saudi Arabia and Ollie Bearman's performance, I think Ferrari will want to see him jump into a Formula One car for next season, and it will be one of these two seats. So, but for them more broadly, Haas are doing fairly well. I mean, they obviously want more points than this, well, because they didn't get any. But from this mid-pack battle, they're starting to show that they're actually the tyre deg is something they're getting on top of.
Yeah, look, I think they're a bit in no man's land this weekend. But, I mean, both Hulk and K-Mag made some great moves on track. K-Mag's move into turn one, can't remember who we got down the inside of, was exceptional. It looked great. Yeah, no man's land. Team's building. As for their seat opening up next year, I think Haas will stick with Hulk and K-Mag next year. I don't think they – well, in the last two or three years anyway, they've decided that they're not taking Ferrari's directions on driver, and we're not going to be a B team for them or a feeder team in order to get the parts. The agreements are in place to get the car on track and use as much of their gear, and they'll do their own stuff, and they'll slowly wean themselves off – the Ferrari, but when it comes to drivers, I think Haas are pretty clear in their decision-making about making up their own minds about who they want to drive. Ollie Bearman, yes, he had a great, you know, a great show when he got his chance, but I don't think Haas will take him. I think Haas want to stick with experience at the moment. Hülkenberg has always been touted as a great driver, is very consistent, well-respected on the grid. Unfortunately for him, he's never been in a car that is capable of getting top tens in the points every week, and I think just that shows throughout his career and the results that he's had, but it just definitely does not show the potential or the caliber of driver that he really is.
All right, RB, Danny Ric, good qualifying, 11th, very close. Obviously the lap one incident. Tsunoda, though, on it, absolutely on it. The first Japanese driver to score a championship point here for quite some time. And I am a big fan of Bonnie, but I'm also a big fan of home drivers scoring points at the home Grand Prix when, you know, the car is really on the cusp of points and not. So let's firstly talk about Yuki Tsunoda, because after his issues the first round, Freya, and him getting very angry with the team and all that kind of nonsense, he's starting to sort of bed down a bit now. He'll be getting some confidence because of Daniel's problems and the media shit show that is focused on getting rid of Ricardo for Liam rather than getting rid of him. And that will add some kind of benefit to him mentally, I'd imagine.
Oh, I'm sure it will. And this weekend will add to that boost. Absolutely. You know, confidence tends to breed more success especially in this type of an environment. Where there's so much on the line every single race weekend, and to now have had a couple of good weekends in a row, that's really great for him. But I just don't want to overstate what he has achieved in the last couple of races. You know, he has had an okay performance in an okay car, and over the course of precisely four races has managed not to lose his shit. Like, that's, to me, a step in the right direction, great, and he should take all the confidence and also the accolades and enjoy his home weekend and all of those things. But I think he's kind of been, you know, talked up in a way that is perhaps not representative of the rate of the increase that we've seen and what he's actually achieved. So fantastic for him to have had the weekend that he's had, and I'm stoked for him. Like, we all, like you said, drivers are getting points and having a good weekend at their home race. You see it, and his family was there, and that's wonderful for him. I'm really, really happy for him. I just don't think that some of the conversations now are proportionate to what we've actually seen.
Now, the internet is a stupid place full of people who are experts. And I would say this, if our opinion isn't the same as yours, it doesn't mean we're incorrect. Just saying. You just have a bigger brain to accept other people's perspectives on things.
Just means you're a dickhead.
It's mind-blowing to me. Mind-blowing to me that people act like that behind a keyboard. Hey, Campy.
I want to talk about
Danny Ric.
Yeah, look. The crash was not Danny Rick's fault. It was not a lap one incident. Danny Ric was in front of both Stroll and Albon. He didn't get the greatest exit out of two. for whatever reason. Danny Rick had a beeline, and he didn't look like he turned right to take Albon off the road. He had a trajectory coming out of turn two to where he was always heading, and he didn't move across. He was, like, you look at his steering wheel, it's not like he turned right and veered across. He was always on that strategic line. I think Albon and that crash, these guys are drivers. They should know where they can and can't put cars on certain places of the track. I think it was cheeky from Stroll having a look up there, and I also think it was dumb from Albon and just lacked a bit of experience. Albon's been taken out by the best of them at some of the most opportune times in Grand Prix. So he should know where and where not to put cars at the moment. In saying that, I'm having a crack at RB at the moment. Why on earth would they choose to start both drivers on the medium compound when we saw what happened? Now, there was some conversation on Discord about, well, it was for strategy because we all knew that their soft tires would burn out too quickly and they wanted the option of doing the one stop. I call bullshit. They need to RB was making decisions basing on jumping up the grid and trying to compete with an Aston Martin, a Fernando Alonso, and possibly the Mercedes. Now, the reality is they are nowhere near that class. They were always fighting over 10th spot today, not even 9th. They were always, and the only exception was Stroll going to be able to come through. So if you race relative to what your car's performance is and you are racing everyone behind you, do not compromise yourself off a start. And start on mediums. Start on what everybody else is starting on, the softs, and they would never have had the problem off track. The only thing I'll say about Danny Rick, whilst it's unfortunate and frustrating, he needs to get more aggressive into turn one. And if I feel like he's had problems throughout his career, he's always timid, and not timid, timid's the wrong word, but he's always cautious going, conservative and cautious going into turn one, and Yuki getting up the inside, that pissed me off. That was Danny Rick's line and he should have had it. Now, look, just get a bit more aggressive off turn one and I think you'll be all right, mate. Otherwise, he had a good weekend qualifying. Clearly, he's figured out something in the car. Yeah, anyway, we'll leave it there. Half a tenth is nothing. So now he's got it on par. He just needs to beat him consistently by a tenth and 3.5 tenths in the next 5 races. And then, you know, Yuki can retire and be another Takuma Sato. And I'm not happy about Yuki's results. I'm not particularly a big fan of Yuki. And you know what? I'm ready to go to war with the Japanese at the moment because they are ruining our boy and his chances of staying in the sport. So that's how I really feel.
I love that you said we'll leave it there and 25 seconds later you finished your point, Freya.
Jim, you talk more than anybody else I've ever met in my life. Hello, cat.
At least I don't put fake ends. Freya.
I agree with 80% of what you've said, Campy. I think the thing with Daniel, though, is that it was very evident that he had no traction. Mm. For whatever reason, he had absolutely no grip, and he learned that immediately off the start.
Yep.
When he started getting swallowed up by everyone on softs, and he was coming out of turn one and was like, I had no grip. So then he had his car on the outside and was trying to go around the outside, and yes, I know he was taking the racing line and trying to leave room for Stroll, but he was not going to be able to stick that, and because of how he'd come out of turn two.
Yep.
So we saw that wiggle and I was like, oh, this is going to end badly. And it did about a second and a half later. Mm. But I do also agree that Albon was also new. He was not going to make it around the outside of that turn. That car shouldn't have been there. But obviously he didn't realize that Stroll was so close on the inside. So that's why it is a lap one incident. But I don't think that, yeah, I think based off what we saw off the start, Ricciardo also should have learned from that. Like, he had no grip. So for the car to be where it was, that was just not going to hold at all. It was an interesting one. But the other thing in terms of the tyres, like you said, and this is where I completely agree with you, why on earth, and Daniel did say that he wanted to start on mediums as well. That's not just the team, but their strategist should have known better. And the reason why I say this is that if you go to Ruth Buscombe's stories, she put up before this weekend even started, she put up stories saying, here's what we know about Japan. And the top of that list was that this is a track where we see offset tire strategies. The
it does not work to save a set of softs for the end of the race because the undercut is too strong. And so why are you saving a set of softs for this type of a track? It makes no sense to me. Everybody else was on softs, and there were other people who publicly said it, who have been in this position before, who had said that will not work. So who is the person at RB who couldn't see that coming? That's the thing which I don't understand, because it's at times you go, a driver is not a race strategist. They're not a race engineer. And at the start of that race, Daniel said, I want to be on mediums, but there should have been somebody who said, we've cut the numbers and that's not going to be an effective strategy. And here's why. Like, explain it to them. Say, this is why that's not going to work. And finally, that point about knowing who your competitors are, who your race is with, is no more important anywhere than it is at a track like this because it is a strategic race. If you think about all of the variables involved and you're trying to look at all of the different scenarios in terms of when people are changing, when people are boxing, what tyres they're starting on, everything else, you have to know who your race is with so you can respond effectively. Because if you're trying to run the variables on every single car ahead of you, there's too much. There's absolutely too much. And this was the perfect race to be able to see that and how important it is to know who your battle is with to make decisions accordingly. Because like you said, their fight is not with Aston Martin. It is not with Ferrari or anybody else who's ahead of them, quite frankly. And it's a perfect example at a weekend like this where strategy is everything.
Let me give you the hot tip, everybody. Daniel will not be replaced by Liam at any point this year. Maybe Liam gets a look at that seat or Yuki's seat for 2025, and as he should, because Liam Lawson is a great talent. He's a wonderful person. He's a lot of fun, and he suits the junior element of that team if this is a junior team, not a sister team. But all of these conversations about Danny Ric being replaced, all of the shit that came out of Australia about this three-race thing, it's nonsense. It's utter nonsense.
Well, call out your mates, Jim, because they're the ones talking the most bullshit.
No, because just all you've got to do, call them out, listener, is
Rob Jones, mate, pull your head in, son.
Why? He's not saying it.
Yeah, he did. I listened to his podcast and they're talking about Danny Rick's washed. He's done. Haven't seen the best of him. I'm igniting a war between me and Rob James. Pull your head in, Rob.
The article that we were talking about, the referencing to that is all nonsense. All right. Please go to racer.com to read stuff. Chris Medland and Michael Laminato, the two journalists that you need to read. If there's actual confidence about a point, those two will report it, especially considering Chris is in the paddock and only starts tweeting or only starts writing articles about stuff that's actually legit. The rest of it, any kind of random Instagram account that pretends to be an F1 news site is bullshit, genuine bullshit. So please just do yourself a favor and read actual decent. Exactly right. What do we know? Absolutely fucking nothing.
Exactly.
Mercedes. George Russell, ninth. Qualified ninth, Hamilton qualified seventh. Finally, fucking Lewis Hamilton out-qualified George Russell. Well done, Lewis. And then finished the opposite way around, and Hamilton was behind George. Hamilton qualified ninth, Russell qualified in seventh. Mercedes there, thereabouts. Aston Martin faster, McLaren faster more often than not, although in Piastri not necessarily in the race. But as Toto Wolff said, Freire, it's a rebuild phase.
Yeah, look, they did give us one of the great scenes this weekend, which was when Russell came out of his pit stop ahead of Norris. That was just an epic scene. Trying to think about some of the moments watching this race that really did give you that kind of F1 buzz, and that was one of them. It was great to see. And the other component with Mercedes this weekend that I'm kind of thinking of was Russell putting Piastri in the danger zone when he was chasing him down. Again, we know what Russell is like in the final laps of a race when he's can either feels like he can taste an extra point or two, and the type of somewhat erratic kind of action that he can take. And so I absolutely had my heart in my mouth while he was chasing him down, because I was like, oh my God, this is a danger zone, Piastri. Don't, you know, try and not let him do anything erratic. And of course, that's exactly what happened. He forced him off the track. And look, there's a lot for this team to be looking at this weekend. Hamilton's an interesting one at the moment. He's like, his mood just completely kind of declined across the course of the weekend. So readily affected by what he's feeling in the car. And I think if you want to see how they, how Mercedes feel about their car at the moment, you can just go and look at Lewis Hamilton and see what's written all over his face and the sentiment and the tone of his comments. He started the weekend on a high and came out lower than low. I think, like, you're right in that it's a rebuild phase for them, but I don't think they know what they're rebuilding and what they're rebuilding towards. Like I said earlier, I just don't see them getting it together in a truly competitive way whilst they're under this set of regulations.
All right, let's keep moving. Aston Martin, Fernando Alonso qualified 5th and Stroll qualified in 16th, which is the incorrect position for that car to be in. Alonso finished in 6th, Stroll finished in 12th. Campy, we say it time and time again. I mean, Lance actually, after exiting in Q1, had his shoulders down, he was shaking his head, walking back to the FIA garage to be weighed, like he was actually disappointed in himself for once.
Yeah, it was good. He had a good Melbourne. He was somewhat on par with Alonso at times. And we thought, oh, is this just an anomaly or are things going to return to the status quo at that team? And yes, they just returned to the status quo this weekend in Japan. It was an anomaly. It was his one in 555 races that he pulls a result out in Melbourne and seemingly does okay against a two-time, one of the greatest world champions we've ever seen. Sorry. Yeah, look, get rid of Stroll. Alonso was good. Alonso, geez, it's one of those tracks. It's a track position is a big thing here, and he had track position over Oscar Piastri, which allowed him to, you know, stay in that sixth place that he qualified in due to his qualifying. So, yeah, look, I've got not much to say about Aston Martin, Nolan. They'll keep getting better and better. Don't go anywhere, Fernando Alonso. If you want to win races, this is your best option.
Yeah, they've certainly started to make a bit of a trend back in the positive direction after their woes towards the second half of last year after a mega start to the
also
last
copied
year.
The side pods of Red Bull this weekend too. That was an upgrade for them. So nothing new out of that
team. Everyone
team.
Will. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? McLaren, Oscar Piastri qualified 6th, finished in 8th. Lando Norris qualified in 3rd, finished 5th. Freya, as you said, Oscar had a very sort of interesting end to the race. Luckily, he's got an old head on young shoulders and is able to have better situational awareness than one George Russell. But really, it's a bit disappointing, I think, for him. He'd be disappointed himself to not have qualified anywhere near kind of Lando, because first time at this track last year, Campy said it as many, many times. This is a circuit that we thought that he would do quite well at. Unfortunately for him, it just wasn't the case.
Yeah, it was not the weekend that I think everybody had really hoped for them as a team. You know, obviously we're thinking about Piastri and his performance relative to Norris, but looking at McLaren as a whole, I think everybody thought that they would do much better here than they did. So it was a little bit baffling in some ways. And you could tell with Norris that, you know, that fifth position he was absolutely not happy with. He probably thought that he could have been on the podium. But it was really tricky to watch, to be entirely honest. It just kind of felt like they were falling away over the course of the weekend. They're not sure about what they'll be thinking about their strategy looking back at this weekend. And there'll be some lessons there, I think, for other tracks that have some similar characteristics. But yeah, I had a lot of nervous moments with Piastri, not only, of course, as we mentioned, with George Russell behind him, but for him chasing down Alonso and waiting for Alonso to pull some sort of Nando move. And as it was, he was just pulling one long continuous move in terms of keeping him in DRS, which of course both Piastri and George knew exactly what was going on. They read that move in the true nature in which it was intended, which was to support his own race. But yeah, look, I think they'll be kind of scratching their heads a little bit in terms of their performance this weekend. But what's interesting is going into China, they just have no one really knows what it's going to be like. They obviously haven't been there for so long that I think they'll probably just start afresh.
All right, we'll take a quick ad break. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, Ferrari, Campy, strategy. They've remembered, they've opened a drawer somewhere in Maranello, pulled out a handbook and it said, oh, F1 strategy. This is what we've been missing for such a long time. Carlos Sainz, what a legend. Every time he has started a Grand Prix in 2024, he's been on the podium. Qualified 4th, finished in third, and Leclerc had a rubbish time qualifying in eighth, but then managed to fight his way through past Lando and a few others with strategy, as I just mentioned, for fourth. This is a much better showing for this team. Fred Vasseur is doing good things here.
Yeah, well, they nailed the split strategy, so that was good. It worked out for both drivers, and Carlos continues his impressive run, and Charles had a rebound on Sunday that he needed from a poor performance on Saturday. So all good. I'm not going to get to the point to say Ferrari's figured it out and they're heading in the right direction. Things change. Look, if you take 1,000 swings, you're probably going to hit at least once, and that seems to be the fact for Ferrari at the moment. So let's just give their strategy. Yep, they got it right on the weekend, which is good. We don't say that too often about Ferrari and strategy and what they're trying to do. But, I like your point about Fred Vasseur. He's got the team seemingly heading in the right direction. So good on him. Good on Carlos. I hope Carlos keeps getting the results he's getting, because if he keeps performing like this, it's going to put egg on a lot of people's faces at Ferrari. Do you think they would change their decision? I don't think this is Charles is a better driver. I think it's sheerly marketing now that Hamilton is the number one.
I agree, and I would also, just in this context of Ferrari, really like to commend Sainz's resilience. He's been through so much in the last 2 months, and I know he's a professional. I know he's a professional athlete, and there's going to be a mental toughness that comes with that and all the work that they do. But still, given what he's, you know, what he's learned about his seat next year, his unpredictable surgery, his comeback from that, everything else, that's not an easy thing to do for the best of us who are, you know, have a high level of resilience. And he's really shown that. And I think that's such an asset, because what it suggests is that when he has a bad weekend at his new team, or if something's not going his way, or is there an unexpected incident like his appendix, he can come back from that and he'll bounce back. And I just think he's really shown incredible resilience over the last couple of months, and that's attractive as well for a potential new
employer.
Yeah,
he said that he wants to get this contract for next year sorted ASAP. I don't blame him, because who knows what the performance of this car will be like towards the tail half of the year. You want to make sure that you sign up on a high, and one of those seats is Red Bull, and obviously it's not Max Verstappen's seat unless he does depart somewhat quickly to Aston Martin, if Adrian Newey goes and a whole range of other people go, as some people have said. But Sergio Perez, finally, almost on par with Max for qualifying, only 6/10, I think he was, or 6/100 away from pole, rather, which is good. Finally, a good showing for Sergio. Qualified second, finished second, exactly what he should be doing. When asked by Sky, Christian Horner said that it's Sergio's seat to lose, and at this point he's doing enough to keep it. So it's interesting. I think there's 13 seats available for next year, theoretically. So where everyone goes, who knows? But Carlos, I think, will be pushing hard to be in that Red Bull campy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the seat you want to be in, particularly in the next couple of years. As I said before, I don't think the pecking order is going to change until new regs. So if he can get himself in that seat, compare himself against the best of the best, and maybe get a result here, because I think Carlos is a better driver than Checo. So that's an exciting pairing. We saw that back in the Toro Rosso back in the
Toro
day?
Toro Rosso.
That's an exciting pairing, you know. 7 or 8 years down the track, and knowing what both drivers can do, and they're probably at the top of their game at the moment. So, yeah, I'd be up for it, but I still want Danny Rick in that seat. So
it's up to Christian. I think Daniel would be in that seat anyway. There's just more things going on behind closed doors. But it's interesting, Freya, that, you know, we talk about, obviously we love Daniel. We want him to be in that Red Bull seat, but really, Red Bull as an organization needs to make sure they get the best pairing possible. And Carlos is an option. Both Daniel and Carlos were Red Bull junior drivers, both left the fold to the point where Daniel followed Carlos around, basically, post Red Bull. There's not really no one else apart from Fernando Alonso, maybe does a single year contract, depending on what happens in that Aston Martin seat. There's some conversations about that going on, whether or not he'd like to, is a different question, and whether Christian and co are able to accept the person that Fernando is into the fold. I mean, it's just really interesting. It's a genuinely interesting, silly season that we're about to go into.
It is, and part of the reason why it's interesting and it's so hard to pick who would be the best option for that seat is because of the Red Bull dynamic, which is the fact that that team is as good as run by the Verstappens. And so as long as you have Max there, it's a problem for your second seat selection because we've said this before on the podcast, I think, you're limited to people who are either accepting of the second driver role, which I think is Checo at the moment. Mm. I think last year he thought he could give it a shot and now he is just going, do you know what, I was going to keep driving, so I'm going to accept that role. Or, which usually means that you've got somebody who's at the start of their career or somebody who's towards the end of their career. And I don't think Carlos is either of those people. Like, I think he wants to be fighting for podiums in a world championship. So I'm not sure that, like, it's a role that comes with a high level of complexity, which is not quite what you would get at Aston Martin, for example. And obviously the trade-off there is that as long as Newey is at Red Bull, you are so much more likely to have success in that car. And maybe you say, do you know what, I'm probably not going to win the championship, but I'll get 15 podiums in the next, you know, 2 years or something like that. It would also depend on whether they're willing to give him a multi-year contract, which they may or may not be willing to do. It seems unlikely from a Red Bull perspective. And I think that that is something that that's this stage of his career, Carlos would really be after. But I just think it's, you know, it's so easy to say that this is the seat that everybody wants, but it comes with a shed load of baggage and, you know, complexities when it comes to your own career that you're not in control of. You know, it's down to the Verstappen. So I don't think it's as black and white as that being the seat that everybody wants. I think there's some other really attractive options, but obviously the trade-off there is performance. But yeah, if Newey leaves Red Bull, if not next year, the year after, because people can see how he can understand new regulations and have the car, you know, hit the ground running ASAP after they are introduced, that's where they're chasing. You know, they're chasing him, not the seat.
Yeah, well, he has just signed a new contract with Red Bull, so it's unlikely that he's going to go anywhere. And I imagine that the sum is probably as much as Max Verstappen's getting paid because the dude knows how to design cars. Although, let's be honest, he didn't design the Mercedes and through that dominant period. So there are other people who can put a dominant package together, but it has to be everything working, including the power unit, not a shitty Renault power unit that then fails and then bring Honda in like they did. But they still got wins with Daniel and Max. And it was
Mercedes won on the back of the turbo hybrid, the first worst engine that we've ever seen in their Formula One. Mercedes won on the back of that being the best because Mercedes already had a truck fleet that was using a similar technology. And when we knew regs were going that way, Mercedes was the first team to jump on that opportunity and get all the intellectual property from their organization and their bigger owners, Daimler and all that, to put it into an F1 car. And that is the only reason that Mercedes dominated for as long as they did. The car was never as quick. The chassis was not good. The drivers weren't as good as, you know, what Red Bull had at the time. But unfortunately, they just couldn't match it on the engine. Given the 7 or 8 years when manufacturers had time to get the engines to a place where they were better and improving on, Mercedes technically should have gone on, driven into the sunset and won every world championship for 15 years.
Fantasy.
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 Freya's gone because Campy's talking too long. Goodbye, Freya. Thanks very much for joining us. Let's go to our fantasy team name competition now. Some names that I have found. Ice Cream Sundays, spelled T-S-U-N-D-A-Y-S. Xanthi V, thank you very much for that. Domo Arigato, Mr. Ricardo. Steen. Sergeant Spare Parts, Timothy Everest. No hat merch, no play. RB, Ailey H, very good. Run, Freya, run. Ian, yes, she has. She's already gone. I didn't even want to say goodbye. She said her driver of the day is Alonso, but we've skipped that part. Freya is my prophet, Damien. Yes, very good. Lil Lord Lando's Lament, Hillary. Alpine Avalanche Survivor. Jenny, very good. Tap and Go Toro Rosso. Shanee, that is fantastic. I bloody love that. Sweaty in Suzuka, Jane, and of course, finishing up with Danny Rick for life. from very Becky. Good. Thank very you good. Very much for all of those. And if you want to be able to be part of our fantasy team name competition, we'll pick the best name at the end of the season, and some Lakeside Drive merchandise will be heading your way. Our rankings for the Japanese Grand Prix, I was in 10th. Campy, you were in 13th, not too far behind. Frey was 86th, which is
love that.
Some
love
that. Some distance.
Good profit first, there, mate.
Yeah. First, though, for Japan, four more rounds, DRSP swap, 292 points. Jason, thank you for that, and well done. Second, Bronny Team 2 from Bronwyn, finally enough, 264 points. And third, remove paint, less than remove organs, Angus H, 263 points. Very tight, actually, in the top 10 with points there. So very well done to you all. And thank you to you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, feel free to leave a rating or a review on either Apple Podcasts, where you can leave a written rating, or on Spotify. And of course, if you're watching on YouTube as well, you can put some comments that you disagree vehemently with us, because we have no idea what we're talking about and we are morons. Up next, a succulent Chinese meal, Campy, as we go to China.
Yeah, can we see some Danny Rick brilliance of 2018 come back in 2024?
Ooh. Well, he's got a new chassis.
What, one race ago?
Yeah, he's got a new chassis. He's got a brand new chassis. And
which he's been campaigning for.
Yeah, but apparently it was supposed to happen anyway. And the fact that Tsunoda is more comfortable with the car than Daniel, that's why Daniel's getting this chassis as they mix the three in. Well, that's what RB is saying, but we'll see.
You know what? A month is a long time in motorsport, Jim. And we'll be sitting here a month and we're all, where was the faith, boys? Where was it? People, where was it?
And we Danny are Rick
will be back on top. He'll be heading to the Red Bull top team.
Hell yeah.
And it's going to happen.
Join us in our profit status about Daniel's return to Red Bull on our Discord server. Go to the links in the description, whatever you want to do. It's been fantastic to talk with you. Campy, massive thank you to you. We'll see you next week for a Chinese Grand Prix succulent meal GP preview. Also. Who?
Ooh. My name's James Baldwin. I've got 5,000 podcasts. Wicked.
Yep, three. I don't have time for your shit, Campy.
Hey, James, is the reason why you haven't watched this race because you were too busy in the paddock? Sports Social Podcast Network.